Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
What episode was that? Episode 6.
Welcome to episode 6 of Overlooked and Undercooked, I believe. My name is Tim Batt.
I'm Guy Montgomery, and we are recording live in the prestigious Crown Plaza, King's Cross, London, England. Just what has been a pretty tremendous break between drinks for us here.
6 months, I think.
At Real Rob Incorporated. To those of you listening to the season sequentially, we will have probably just hung up our microphones after a conversation with, I believe, Dan Rath. Over episode 5, Coffee Beans.
Good memory.
And
I remember what happened too. There we were in Melbourne, and Monty said, should we go and have a beer? And
what? I said, we'd watched 5 fucking episodes of Real Rob in a day.
I was like, yeah, let's go and have a beer. And then we had a beer, and then we ran out of time. And now we're here in London, and we've got a young upstart, up-and-coming comedian who we've invited to guest on this sort of... with this next episode.
Yeah, that's pick right. Up. You might know him from Off Menu or whenever this gets released, the current or most recent or second to last or third to last season of Taskmaster. Everybody, it's Ed Gamble.
Oh, hey guys.
Hey, Ed.
Hey, Ed.
Can I just say, the most modern feeling of anxiety in the world is when you're a guest on a podcast but you're waiting to be introduced and the hosts are introducing it.
I don't think we did a particularly good job either of
bringing
you in.
No, I thought it was
in.
Great, and I thought you got to me quite quickly, because I've been on a few where there's like 10 minutes of chat and they're catching
and
up.
Do you,
and asking,
will you often leave sort of little noises on, you know, the worst
I'll
feeling
laugh,
in the
world? Yeah. I laugh even when I don't think it's funny, just to be like, I'm here, remember guys.
I kick in the door. You know, the idea that you're not allowed to introduce yourself on podcasts, this isn't radio, this isn't some sort of formal medium, this is... You know,
that's the point, isn't it?
Yeah,
there's no rule. Take the rule book, throw it out the podcast window.
I like following the rules.
Okay.
I think podcasts have been around long enough now where we need to start following the rules.
Name names. Who's keeping you waiting 10 minutes before you're allowed to ring in?
Rosie Jones and Helen Bauer's podcast. It's called Daddy, Please Look at Me. And it's a very funny podcast, but they were talking for up to 15 minutes. And
that's
to keep
crazy.
Me quiet while they were talking, Helen Bauer made me do a word puzzle on her phone.
See, that's
like a
almost,
child.
Yeah. That's performance art at that point. Yeah. Your silence and your enthusiasm for the rules, I'm sure, was probably part of a wider narrative between episodes.
I fell for it as well. I was doing the word game. I was like, I'm really enjoying the word game. Yeah. And I solved it. I was really
pleased
with
myself. The worst
myself.
Of both worlds. Yeah. You're just about to crack the puzzle. And then they go, welcome to the podcast. Gamble.
Now, gentlemen, I hate to move us on prematurely, but we're approaching the 3-minute mark and can't help but notice we haven't broached the sort of format, the whole raison d'etre for us being here.
So that was episode 6 of season 2 of Real Rob. Hmm. Before we launch into a conversation, does anyone here remember the title of the episode?
No.
Yes, I do. It was Authentic Self, I believe.
That's right. And I guess... a place to start would be asking you, what did you, prior to half an hour ago, know about the Real Rob universe?
I have seen the first episode of Real Rob.
Season 1.
Season 1.
Huh.
The first episode.
And you didn't stick with it.
I didn't stick with it, no. Interestingly, I saw it with Nish Kumar when we lived together. We watched it. and we couldn't believe it was a thing. And even now, it seems like some sort of crazy fever dream.
Yeah.
This does actually put you into quite a sweet spot, though, because traditionally, the first episode of anything, it's quite challenging to establish the parameters of the show, the world of the show, the rules of the show. Sure. So, you know, between that and I'd say, what is it? It'll be, you know, there's 12 episodes or whatever between that and now.
Yeah.
How far have we come?
Well, I mean, I don't feel like I've missed anything in the interim period, really. I don't. There's certain aspects of it now that I don't remember being so prevalent in episode one. Here's a question. I guess you don't know how they film it, but it seems like they
iPhones, I think.
They do it a take line by line. And they stitch it all together because the pauses between the lines are quite incredible.
I think, yeah, Rob Schneider's in charge, and I understand the only way he knows how to operate is sequentially. So he's literally across every single job on set.
Yeah.
So if even one cog gets moved out of place, the whole house of cards comes tumbling down.
But he'll say a line, and there'll be a pause. They'll cut to his wife, she'll pause, she'll say a line, and so on and so on.
It makes for a pretty good edit, though. Can you imagine the editor being in there being like, mate, this is awesome.
Yeah, when you say the editor, do you mean Rob Schneider?
When Rob Schneider opens up iMovie, he's got all of these just clean audio points where he can cut to the next shot.
But it's like, my knowledge of Rob Schneider previously was just doing one line in Adam Sandler films.
You didn't explore slightly further off path into his solo vehicles, The Animal, The Hot Chick?
No, not seen The Hot Chick.
Juice Bigelow?
I've seen Juice Bigelow.
And?
Well, it's obviously awful.
Did you love it, though, when you saw it?
Oh, yeah. I watched it all the way through.
It's a huge bitch! You're not allowed to laugh at that.
There you go.
Yes. At the time, though.
Yeah.
But this isn't one of those podcasts, Guy.
No, I know. But, you know, do you remember how things were back in the 90s?
Oh, fuck, here we go.
But it's like he's recorded him doing a series of cameo lines in his own sitcom.
Yeah, well, it's all he knows, isn't it?
Yeah, so that's when he's most relaxed, when he's just like, you just come in, you do one line. So he's just in and out the whole time.
Do you know what, though? So in this episode, he laps some fake whiskey because he's in a set on the film and quite a meta sort of analysis of his method.
It's many layers deep.
He licks it like a cat, and I have to say it was probably the strongest performance that he had in there. A bit of physical comedy, and he was committed to it. And I think as ludicrous as the action was, even within context, it made zero sense.
Sure.
But it was the funniest thing he did.
But then he did it again. Then he sipped the whiskey and spat it out.
It's classic Rob.
What this sitcom has a little bit of a problem with is setting up a joke and then unpacking it.
Yes.
Until the suitcase is empty and then filling the suitcase back up again and unpacking it.
It's like getting in the suitcase.
Yeah. Euphemistic British language. Yeah. Saying what this sitcom has a little bit of a problem with. I think just...
You developed a bit of a catchphrase for what he does. What was it? It was like... five times the charm was like, rule of seven or something.
Yeah. I think it's,
Rob Schneider's comedy rule of seven.
Yeah, I think it's, if you try the same gag seven times, eventually one of them will hit.
Well, that's every scene, isn't it? Mm. So there's the scene with the children in this episode where he goes in to give like a speech to the children about their dreams and excitement. And then obviously top line is Rob's insensitive to the children. Do it with all the children. Out you get. Including, by the way, we can't be having that referring to a kid as an Indian kid. And the kid says, I'm Pakistani, and says they're the same thing.
This show famously made last year. Just to hear
the year of our Lord 2018.
The swift pivot from being on set on some film within the TV show to in a classroom delivering a speech. For those listening along who haven't watched the series, maybe just to center us, you could give us a brief plot synopsis of the episode actual self.
I would love to.
Best of luck, Ed. I'm praying for you.
So his wife's away filming something, which is that is set up at the beginning of the episode as if that's going to be a major plot point. But it is just set up to get her off set for a bit. So clearly she's having some time off.
I know that I've just given you this task, and I hate to immediately interrupt, but the storytelling technique is literally he launches several balls into the air at the start of the episode, and it's whatever he remembers he's throwing.
Well, in this episode, he's just watched them all fall to the ground.
He's got eight balls.
Yeah.
There's always one in the air, but he can never remember.
What are those balls there for? And then it's set up that he's going to this school to give a talk to them about their excitement projects, which I think for any other sitcom, that would be... Come on, Alice. I think for any other sitcom, that would be like a whole episode, right? Or like half an episode. But it's one scene.
Well, yeah.
They set it all up in the scene in the bed at the beginning. Him and his wife are talking, and you're like, we know that's set up.
His wife's going away, and so Rob, which is outside of his ordinary purview, is responsible for childcare and all sorts of sort of domestic chores that are usually beyond his... I mean, reach, and this is a point that Tim constantly made throughout the episode, is Rob has written... Like, this is Rob Schneider's starring vehicle.
Oh, yeah.
And he has chosen to write the character as, you know, because we're in a time in television where people embrace anti-heroes and whatnot.
Sure.
And he's written a character, but, you know, there's no complexity to this anti-hero. It's just this, like, unrelenting curmudgeon.
But it seems, I think, I like it. I like an anti-hero. I like it when people write themselves as arseholes or whatever. So, like, you know, Curb Your Enthusiasm or something like that. But what he's done, it's like he's writing it as if he thinks he's a good guy.
Exactly.
So he's writing an arsehole character, but by accident.
Yeah. It's a beautiful mind, Rob Schneider. It's like, what's the state? It's mental illness, isn't it? Because if the very tool with which you perceive reality is broken, then you're really at sea, aren't you? Because then you have no yard. Your yardstick is broken.
The looking glass is cracked.
Yes. So how will we even determine what a villain is anymore?
But he's turning a mirror on himself, but the mirror is a piece of wood.
The most beautiful part of it is, though, he's circumvented any element of that being a problem in the production process by literally taking control of every facet of the production. At no point can anyone say, Rob, this doesn't work, because the only person who's allowed to say that is Rob Schneider himself.
So there's two more plot points that we need to cover.
Yes.
One, Adam Sandler calls him.
Yes.
And says,
huge for us.
Very exciting.
Yeah,
you
guys lost it then.
I mean, you know that Adam Sandler had 100 unanswered emails before. He was like, fine, if you'll stop getting in touch with me, I'll fucking drop in for a scene.
I'll only film the scene by myself on the phone.
And it's on a green screen. Well, he's got two scenes, and one of them's obviously a green screen.
Yeah. But also, it really makes you appreciate Adam Sandler.
He is such a good guy.
When you put him up against Schneider's performance,
it's
mind blowing, isn't it?
Yeah,
say what you will about the Sandman, he's not Rob Schneider, and that's important.
Yeah, so he's sort of, because I think one of the elements of pathos we're meant to care about is Rob's career is kind of stalling. His wife's career seems to be kicking off. She was in that soap opera the last episode, and the soap opera's flown her out to San Diego to shoot the finale or whatever. And Adam Sandler, so successful that nothing matters to him. His life is like, you know, there's... And so he's saying...
We see him, he's flying a big old drone, kicking back in a lounger.
Which is what we'd all do if we had his money,
and
right?
And he's got the chef from Nobu at his house. He brings out a plate of sushi and he goes, I wanted this for later.
Was I supposed to know what Nobu was? Because I just assumed I had missed something earlier in the year.
No, I think it's a semi-famous Californian sushi eatery that's quite like...
There's one in London too.
Oh, there you
go. Kind of Michelin star
really nice sushi, like Japanese food. Here's what I want to know. Is there a chef actually called Nobu? Is that who that guy was?
Oh, boy.
Or was it just a Japanese man?
I think undoubtedly option B.
Yeah.
I mean...
Because it's bad enough just getting a random guy to be the stand-in for the chef, but if they're just calling a random guy the name of the restaurant...
Yeah. Of course, but no, of course, because that's half the gag in this, is that these...
Racism.
They're assholes. Like, Adam Sandler seems to be enjoying playing himself. And to be fair, that's something that Adam Sandler enjoys doing constantly.
He's relishing it.
I think he can do it from the place of security that he is actually a good guy.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, if you've seen 100% Fresh, his Netflix special. Sandler special?
Oh, was that awesome one that he did recently?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
His humanity and his love of his family shines through the whole thing.
Yeah.
What Rob Schneider has shown up of his relationship to his family is just like unwavering resentment and fury at the life he has created for himself and disgust at every component part of it.
He's very bitter, isn't he? He feels like a man who has made his bed and hates the bed.
Yeah.
He pissed in the bed. Like, it's no one's fault. It's an unforced error. But you can kind of understand how he got there emotionally, because as Guy mentioned earlier, he did have a string of, you know, commercial hits.
I owned three of his movies on VHS, I was a Schneider fan.
Yeah.
There was a time when I'd see anything he made.
And I'm sort of going back in the archives now a little bit, but from memory of our research, they dropped him from Grown Ups.
Yeah,
some unpleasantness, I think.
There was some sort of miscommunication, but he's in Sandler's, you know, like that. I think, you know.
He's in the special, is he?
He's in the special. He sort of does one line. He flies in on some sort of. Is it not a trapeze? What is it called when people fly off?
It's on a wire.
They're called wires.
Wings.
We've derailed the plot and the plot summation once more.
Yeah, because we've not even hit the actual main plot strand, he's filming an independent movie, right?
Oh, yeah.
We've
so
not
how
even
did they
covered that?
I think I might have been opening a beer, very focused on that when that happened. What happened there?
There's no other setup other than he's filming an independent movie.
Right. But the through line is when he's reckoning with his jealousy of his wife's success, he's like, well, I've got this great role in this independent thing. And then when he's talking to Sandler, and Sandler goes, I'm going to Greece, I'm going to go on holiday, I'm doing whatever the fuck I want because I met him, Sandler. He's going, yeah, well, I've sort of got this role in this little independent. So, you know, this is like, I think he's using it to temper jealousy. But then the second half of the episode, with absolutely no setup for it, in the very long 16-minute first half of the episode, is him on set. And it's a testament to this episode that Sandler's barely even the biggest draw on screen in terms of cameos.
Michael Madsen.
Yeah.
Actual Michael Madsen rocks up. He just looks incredible.
Run us through that scene. It's not a long one, but it feels like a lot is in there.
What does Rob Schneider have on Michael Madsen? What are you doing here, Michael?
I don't really know what Michael Madsen is in, like every Quentin Tarantino film, but I don't know apart from that what he's actually doing. So I think he's ready to go. When Rob Schneider dropped you an email, you're going to play yourself. Sounds like a lot of fun.
You're going to play yourself. We're going to shoot it sequentially. Yeah.
I realize he's a good actor. Funnily enough, I sort of missed his role, but Alison N was helpfully watching the episode with us as well and providing some color commentary, as we call it. But we had just seen
Alison N beaming after retreating into her shell for that cough that
we just saw,
ruthlessly chastised her for.
We just saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the latest Tarantino movie. Obviously, he's a really fantastic actor, but it felt beyond acting, the rueful anger which he directs at Rob Schneider in the scene, which is all about Rob Schneider kind of being a piece of shit on set, and it felt a bit too real.
Oh, it was definitely real, and also he was clearly just doing every line once.
Yes.
So there's a couple of lines where he loses his way, genuinely loses his way halfway through a line, and then finds his way back, and they just let that run.
We've got one go at all of these.
Yeah, no one's going, all right, do you just want to do that again clean? Do you just get that clean?
Well, because they had
him for 20 minutes.
They use that brilliant sort of cinematic device when they transition from, you know, watching the process of the movie being made on a TV show to actually filming the movie. They change from color to black and white because it's the sort of gritty mafia movie.
But they all the mistakes are in that as well, which suggests that they have edited them and put them through a grading process.
Absolutely.
Ready for the movie and just leave that in the bit where he licks the whiskey like a cat.
And so the first take they do and he licks the whiskey like a cat and it sort of breaks the whole momentum of the scene and they stop and everyone's like, what the fuck was that? And he goes, well, I had a sip. And they go, no, you were drinking like a cat. That's what a cat does. And he's like, oh, okay, we'll do it again. And they do it again. And the next time he does this thing where he sort of dribbles it out of his mouth back into the cup after actually taking a swig, and Michael Madsen's reaction, I've never seen anything on screen straddle the line between performance and reality. Like, he was literally caught in purgatory where he was he was like angry and laughing as himself and as the character on the show. And it's so obvious that they couldn't shoot it again because they just stuck
they had him for one line. But he'd received no direction as to how the character of Michael Madsen should be reacting. So he was like angry, but then laughing, and then angry and laughing all at the same time. And then he was angry and went to his trailer.
It doesn't
bizarre.
Sound like a weird thing when you say it out loud, but folks, you got to watch this one clip. It's fucking wild. Just this reaction that he has.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Also, as just while we're talking about celebrities in the show, a small subplot that went absolutely nowhere, to not my surprise but minor frustration, is that Jamie, the much put upon assistant, is given like this really promising romantic lead in the form of a yoga instructor and fellow vegetarian on set, played by Hayley Duff, most famous, sadly, for her, but not for us, for being Hilary Duff's sister. And then, like, they sort of set it up like, oh my God,
yeah,
you know. And then knowing our relationship to him through the show, it's like, well, this is all going to go horribly wrong in a very, you know, physically painful and funny way, purportedly funny way for us.
It's one of those balls that he forgot.
That's one of the balls for sure. Because you guys had set his character up for me, like, something always goes wrong with this guy.
Yeah.
He's going to get electrocuted. He's going to get burnt. And then he squatted for a yoga move and she left. And you guys were like, here we go. Something bad's going to... So I was like, what's going to happen? He's going to sit on a spike. His pants are going to rip off and a crow's going to come down and peck his balls.
I thought he was going to shit himself. I would have put money on it. I would have bet you £20
on that. I thought the eggplant that she gave him for lunch, the vegetarian option,
Set up. There's a set up, folks.
But what happens is Rob Schneider comes along and says, oh, you look a bit silly.
Sometimes the thing that goes wrong in a storyline is that Rob Schneider forgets to finish writing them.
That's a kind of a punchline, isn't it?
It's like he's written that whole scene and then on the set he's gone, how about I just come on instead?
Yeah.
How about we forget that and I come on and do another line?
Me.
I'll riff something. Yeah. It'll be fine.
That is what it's like, isn't it? He's behind camera. He calls action on a scene. It starts happening. And he's like, oh, I think I can get in there. Yeah. I got something. Literally walks around from behind frame and just goes and tanks the whole thing and goes, yeah, cut, next.
That's definitely what happened with the apple juice licking scene, where he's licking the whiskey apple juice. And then they're like, right, that's in the script. And he's like, I've got another one. And so then he spits it out. And then
the spitting thing as well. There's a bit of movie magic that's gone into it, because he's spitting for an impossibly long amount of time. So they've put a tube out of, you know, on the other side of his face away from the camera to make it go.
Truly?
They keep the shot going for so long. But like, it doesn't he takes a little sip.
It doesn't go on long enough to justify a tube.
Absolutely not. It's just long enough so that you know they've done something, but not long enough to be funny or have any particular reason.
Well,
but it's just like, it's this constant reminder that people exist creating the show that's really depressing to me.
You miss 100% of the guesses you don't take.
What really depresses me
is this is what Rob Schneider, that's how he treats comedy. It's a huge mystery.
Yeah.
I had a good run in the late 90s where I took a lot of guesses and people were into it.
Well, yeah, like,
but then I lost it. Fuck.
It's the most unlikely law of averages, but it does feel like there was a time there when he was, you know, like, it doesn't feel like he's in control of any of the decisions he's making. No.
If you explain what the animal is, that's not funny, but he did it and it worked. And it made a lot of money.
Yeah, and he was acting opposite the female lead in the movie The Animal. Was probably the second most popular female contestant from the first season of Survivor, who had no history of acting whatsoever.
Wow, we made things different back then, didn't we?
I feel really bad for the people who have bit parts in this show, because they would have been really excited that they're on a show.
You're Hayley Duff's?
Not even Hayley Duff's. I'm talking the guy who plays like the runner.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So he's all eager, and he's pretty good. Like, there's nothing wrong with what he's doing. But he's like, I'm on a show. And no, then it's real Rob.
I think they'd be down with it because, and I can't remember the specifics, but maybe I should look them up during the next episode. But we get sent by the people who listen to this podcast and behind the scenes stuff, and apparently that like people are getting fucked over left, right and center who are making this.
Right.
It's very low budget in spite of the fact that it is a Netflix commissioned show.
Yeah. Not commissioned by.
Yeah.
Well, that's key. They bought it.
Guy and I believe that Rob Schneider has given them a show and some money to get it onto Netflix, and the transaction's slightly different to the norm.
But they must be, if they are paying for it, it will not be much money.
Absolutely.
He's got no sense of business.
No.
He's making a show fully and then bringing it to Netflix.
This thing arrived at Netflix on a flash drive wrapped up in a $20 bill.
The bargaining system that's going on there where he goes, well, here's a fully produced series. They go, all right, we'll pay $10 for it. And he goes, no.
I want
more than that. And they're like, well, you've made it already. There's nothing you can do in this situation.
Oh, I can't believe I did this two seasons in a row.
It's like Garth Marenghi. So Garth Marenghi's Dark Place, the joke is that they just went ahead and made the show. So there's a line where Richard Ayoade says, and we didn't know you had to wait. we just went ahead and made it and then wanted to see who wanted it.
But this is to your point that the people who, you know, you feel slighted on their behalf, people who featured in it, these are not, you know, I wouldn't say they're real actors. They're people who are pursuing a career in acting who maybe would not otherwise get on anything. And I think they'd be very happy to have that credit on IMDb.
I don't know. It'd
be like if I was on it. I'd be fucking stoked.
Well, that's got to be the end of this podcast.
That would be an enjoyable sort of cultural oddity. I don't know that you would be stoked.
I'd be stoked.
I remember, because we've spoken about the supporting players in passing on this before, and it's interesting to me, you know, this is ostensibly a comedy show, and Rob Schneider, you know, like usually on any comedy show, more specifically in the first season, you'd populate it with people who you know are funny from like the comedy industry or scene who will later go on to become successful performers. Sure. He is batting at 0% in terms of picking performers who will come on and steal a scene, or like, you know, I know that they're not given a lot to play with.
But it's another guess, isn't it? He's just guessing in the casting as well. That one guy, his only line is, yeah, we've got vegetarian options, hot dog or burger buns with relish. And that's it. And he's out.
Those performances are more in keeping with the overall tone. Like, because that guy did not feel like a performer. He felt like someone who obviously would go stand behind that food and say this stuff.
He was a sayer.
Yeah. And that
sayer.
And that is more in keeping with the show than, say, the guy who was the runner and was doing all these jobs. So he tells Robbie he doesn't have a trailer. Who is actually giving in some sort of acting or comedic performance.
Sure.
And you see it and you're like, I think this is where that feeling of unease and sorrow comes from.
Definitely.
Because it's like, you're trying and it's not fair. Because,
Rob's not trying.
Yeah, no one else is.
It's awful.
Although there is a believability to Rob's performance because
it's real Rob.
It is real Rob. The clue was on the tin the whole time. But you can tell that he is, in real life, a narcissistic piece of shit because he wears he's not an intelligent man. This is what I can't escape. The thing about, I interviewed him once on the radio.
Did you?
I talked to him for about half an hour. I had to cut it into like 6 minutes to put on a rock, you know, music station a few years ago. He's real into Buddhism and sort of Eastern religions, but he's not a deep thinker at all.
In theory, he is. It's a nice thing to say. Yeah. It's not something he's comfortable being asked about.
No. And we watched a clip last week. He's an anti-vaxxer as well. But he actually had a pretty fucking articulate sort of semi-libertarian slant on why.
He talked Tim around.
Hey, play the tape back. You were convinced, mate.
Oh, look, I was just looking for something to say.
Why is none of that stuff making it into real Rob?
That would be kind of good. Well, but it seeps in because the thing about the organic apple juice... That's all these little things that seep in
but
from his
life. He doesn't
real
have the attention span to stick to any of these through lines. Because he does at the start of the episode. For those of you playing along at home, we had a false start where we started watching the last episode when we were trying to figure out where we got up to.
Yeah.
And his wife's saying, I'm going to go to Mexico or the Bahamas. And he goes, yeah, well, that's fine if you want to get... You know, like, the idea that he's got all these conspiratorial ideas on things that'll make you sick.
So it's really interesting because he, I would assume he's writing that as a character point to be an arsehole. So like the bag of organic food, I'm like, he's gone, what would a dickhead version of me do?
See,
but he's
him.
Actually just putting in his genuine points
of real
view.
Rob.
So that is real. Wow.
Yeah.
This show's so much better than I thought.
Yeah. So Rob Schneider, I think we could probably say quite definitively now, is exactly the kind of dude who's on Facebook and that he has been targeted by all of those fake news websites. Yeah. And he's reading a headline or maybe the first paragraph of everything. And he's formed a web of lies in his head that explains the world.
He's got the time to take it all on board and turn it into one quarter-formed opinion.
And you do, he does, there are episodes where he, you know, like you see him on the computer half researching some fucking whacked out thing. So he's sort of got an awareness of it. But again, he just, I think, lacks the intelligence, you know, to sort of see it the whole way through.
To talk about this does open up the idea that for this show to work or be remotely interesting, all it needs is to become a genuine documentary.
Yeah. So, give someone else the camera.
Yeah, 100%. Give Jamie the camera.
Give Jamie because the camera and film the writer's room. I'll watch that happily.
It's the thing that is blocking the show from operating is like he's the self, you know, like
he's the filter.
He still doesn't know that he looks like an asshole on the show, but he's still afraid that he will, or he's afraid he'll look stupid.
He's not far off as well, eh?
Yeah.
It only needs to be a half a step beyond what it is.
It's amazing that he lets half of that come out as well.
He says cunt in this episode. That was big.
Well, that's the most convincing acting performance he turns in is all the lines of dismissive insults he's written for himself.
Yeah.
And like it's sort of the insolence with which he treats those around him. Those are like when he goes, "Are you fucking idiot?" It's like, yeah, you believe that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that just came out. That was
exactly. So what, like comparing this to the pilot episode, Ed, do you think there's been any progress? Has he learned any lessons along the way?
In terms of storytelling,
putting a show together, but I can't even remember what the story was of the pilot.
What was your initial take on the pilot?
Oh, it was truly dreadful stuff. We couldn't believe what he was trying to. So they're not talking heads in this.
No, they used to be talking heads. So there used to be early doors. There was talking heads. There was
another Rob Guess.
There was the soundstage stand up. So it was interspersed with like Kardashian style talking heads. Also, him doing stand-up, like a Seinfeld or Louis type thing.
Oh, it was having a go at every show, right? Basically.
Yeah.
And then he sort of...
And the bed thing, because you mentioned that, I just thought that's probably him doing Everybody Loves Ray.
Yeah.
Mind.
Was that the name of the show?
Everybody Loves Raymond.
Oh, yeah, true. I thought it was right. Yeah, yeah.
I think you've been confused. The amount of comedic talent we've packed into this hotel room. So, you know, off mic we have Alice Sneddon and Ray Badron.
Ray Badron is vertical. Or he's sort of, no, horizontal, but... You're at a right angle. He's stretching his legs out against the wall.
If we spent the amount of time we did consuming Rob Schneider just trying to come up with one idea between the five of us that we wanted to create, we could make something so much better.
The joke truly is on us, isn't it, ultimately?
As it always is. And that's why we can say these horrible things about Rob Schneider and his beautiful family. Mm.
Yeah, I just remember thinking how much he was trying to do Modern Family with the first episode. Especially, I mean, there are some comparisons anyway. I don't think I knew that was his real wife until today.
Yeah.
So it seemed so much like Modern Family because it's like an older guy with like a hot wife from Latin America who's way out of his league, and they live in a nice house. And they do those outside of house shots as well to establish a new scene, which nothing will happen in. The way scenes move on in this is absolutely incredible. Like you said, if there was no music in it, it would be the maddest show of all time.
Yeah, to punctuate the end of a scene, we'll just keep coming back to the same electro swing. They've paid for the rights to use one track.
One clip, yeah.
And they just... and it's the same one from the first season, too. They haven't changed it.
If it ain't broke.
Is it not a test? I mean, he has learned in that he has removed the talking heads.
Yes.
He has removed the stand-up on a soundstage.
He's not replaced them with anything.
No, yeah. And it's not that he's concentrated the time he was spending writing or performing those scenes on getting the other stuff right. It's just that they're no longer
there. It's a good tip if you're making art to put every idea you've ever had into one thing and then just strip them away one by one.
And then keep going until you lose interest.
Until it's just a husk.
Yeah. So I would recommend watching this particular episode.
For the cameos.
Sandler's in this one. You can't go past that.
Is there anything that you enjoyed that you'd like to recount before we... I'm aware that we're on a bit of a this much comedic talent packed into a room. We're essentially holding some of these people hostage.
Absolutely.
The highlight was Madsen for me, I think. The Madsen cameo is absolutely astonishing.
For the surprise, the shock factor, or for the actual cameo itself?
For the shock factor, and then I think he really delivered on the cameo. The sort of stasis he was caught in that reaction is genuinely worth
watch.
He
is, like, he almost represents the real world in the way he performs.
It's like he didn't know whether it was a documentary or a sitcom.
Yeah.
It's like they didn't tell him to get the most real performance out of Impossible.
Yeah.
It just strikes me that they had him for 15 to 20 minutes.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And they used every frame that you see is like everything they could get.
He walked straight. They slapped a mic on him as soon as he was through the door. That's why he's so confused. Those are his own clothes.
Yeah.
There was no costume on that day.
No doubt. And that was a genuine walk-off at the end of his scene.
Yeah, they never saw him again.
What a show, though. You know, they got it finished. It's all there. It's in focus. I can't get away from the fact it's all in focus on this show. You know, it's in focus.
There's no denying it.
It's all lit.
I might have to watch the next episode to see if the yoga instructor comes back, though.
She won't. Let me tell you,
I believe in him, man. I think he's going to pull it out of the bag.
Those are the plot devices. Those are the hooks that keep fans watching for more. It's like whether or not a character will reappear.
I'm not averse to putting money on this.
Let me know, because I might watch another episode.
All right.
Let him know right now.
£20 that she does not reappear.
All right.
Done.
You're on.
That's all a right. great
Let's
bet.
Shake on
Ed, if people want to keep in touch with you, how can they do that?
What's your phone number?
If you want to get in contact with me directly.
+44
We don't say that, weirdly. You can hit me up.
Yeah, that's what the kids say. Absolutely.
Yeah, sure.
You a cop, Gamble?
I bet lots of our listeners are gonna hit you up, old man.
You can contact me on Twitter at Gamble Comedy.
And you've got I forgot to say at the start of the episode, you also got a new stand-up special streaming on Amazon Prime.
Yes, it's called Real Ed. It's called Blood Sugar, and it's available on Amazon Prime.
Well, thank you so much. It's great to be back in the saddle, as great as it can be. And I'd like to sign off this episode by saying Roger Daltrey took a shit in my guest house.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.